Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
All right, so let's pick up. So we are now on day two of episode number two. We are on page 134, really beginning on page 132 and 133. Episode two, of course, will be titled The Stealing of the Blessings, in which Yitzchak, who is getting old, wants to bestow the blessings upon Esav. And as we are going to learn, and as we are familiar with the basic storyline, Yaakov is going to come in and steal them from right under his nose. This is our second class. What we're doing again is going through the text, as we're going to go through the whole story once, get a flavor, a feeling of it, hopefully raise a whole lot of questions, and then if we are successful, we'll be able to answer the questions that we have raised, but let's see if we manage that. So it's a very, very quick review of what we did last week. I'm going to read just the verses in English. It'll take just a minute just to get us back into the feeling, the flow of it on page 135. I'm going to read in English just to fly through it. The beginning of chapter 27. I remind you that the end of chapter 26 recorded that Esav had gotten married at the age of 40, and that the women whom he married, he had two wives. Both of them were Chittim, were from the land of the Chitti, and they were a source of Moras Ruach. Both to Yitzchak and to Rivka, they were a source of spiritual rebellion, is the way the Art Scroll translated as. So that we are introduced to this story by already being told that Esav had married women whom both Yitzchak and Rivka were not particularly pleased with and did not receive nachas from, but the opposite of that, but moras ruach. Okay, the story began. It came to pass, Yitzchak had become old, his eyes dimmed from seeing, that he summoned his son Esav, his older son, and said to him, "My son." And he said to him, "Here I am, Hineni." So he calls to his son. Esav responds, "Hineni." We've mentioned that his eyes were dimmed. What's the significance of that? He is now old. And he says to him, "I have aged. I do not know the day of my death. Sharpen, if you please, your gear, your sword, your bow. Go out to the field and hunt game for me. And then make delicacies such as I love, and bring it to me, and I will eat, so that my soul may bless you before I die." We mentioned the difficulties as to why Yitzchak felt it necessary to be so descriptive to his son, who's a professional hunter, who probably knows what he needs to do in order to be successful out in the fields hunting game. And Yitzchak, the elderly father, the man of the Beis HaMedrash, says, "Sharpen your bow and your sword and go out, prepare for me delicacies, I will eat, and then my soul will bless you." Which really provided for us the elephant in the room question of why is food such a major part of this entire story. Like, underlying the entire story of the stealing of the blessings is that the context of the theft, if you will, was over food. And that Yitzchak, in the spiritual sense of my soul desiring to bless you, felt the need to have not just like a brownie. He needed a fresh steak dinner in order to be able to do so. And that, of course, as we mentioned last week, that's the big elephant. Why is food such a role? It's one of the elephants, because there'll be others. Okay, Rebecca was listening as Isaac spoke. We pointed out, sounds almost intentional. If you remember, we said when Sarah was listening behind the tent a couple weeks ago, it says, and Sarah was listening from behind him at the door. And here it just says, without that extra phrase, from behind him in the doorway, here it just says that Rivka was listening as Yitzchak spoke. Esav leaves, and Rivka says to her son Yaakov, "Behold, I have heard your father speaking to your brother Esav, saying, 'Bring me some game and make me delicacies to eat, and I will bless you in the presence of Hashem before my death.'" We mentioned the differences here. When she says, "Make me delicacies to eat," she does not add the phrase which Yitzchak did of "which I love." She does not say that. She just says, "Make me delicacies." Here, she reports him as saying, "And I will bless you." And in reality, he had said, "My soul will bless you." And then she adds a phrase of, "in the presence of Hashem," which Yitzchak himself did not say. So we'll have to work through the differences between what he actually said and the way that Rivka reports what he said, and if there are significances in them. She continues, "So now, my son, heed my voice to that which I command you. Go now to the flock and fetch me from there two choice young kids of the goats, and I will make them delicacies for your father as he loves. And now she adds the phrase when she's talking about her preparing them, that it will be as he loves. Then bring it to your father and he shall eat, that he may bless you before his death. So she never mentions the phrase that his soul will bless you, which Yitzchak himself said, but she does eventually add as he loves. This is where we got up to. We mentioned the question as to two kid goats. How much can one person possibly eat? That's number one. Number two is, what kind of meat do you think their father loved? Was it goat meat, or was it some type of game meat?
Game, yes.
It had to be game. In other words, there's no way that Yitzchak was asking Esav to go get some goats, because then he would also just go out to the flock and pick some up. So she's clearly going to have to disguise the goat meat, or that it must be similar enough to some other type of freshly hunted game that Esav would be pursuing. Okay, that's where we got up to. That's our 4-minute review of what we did last week in an hour. So far, so good? Okay, let's pick up on Pasuk Yud Aleph 11 with Yaakov's response. Vayomer Yaakov, let's just think for a second. Now, we know the story, but if we were to read this for the first time, and you're Yaakov Avinu, and you just got this command from your mother. Again, in his world, he wasn't there for the opening act. All he knows is what was reported to him from his mother. He receives this word that your father has just sent out your older brother to hunt for him game, so he should receive the blessings before your father dies. And now he hears his mother saying, I command you, go into the flock, take for me the two goats. I'm going to prepare the food the way your father loves. And you will go in so that he may bless you before his death. I never thought about it before. Like, you're Yaakov. What's your response to your mother's command?
Unbelievable.
Honestly, what would be the parts? Would you have concerns? If you had concerns, what would those concerns be? The thinking in terms of you just got received this command.
Well, he knows that his father would be blessing Esau. And if he takes it in there, then he's going to know it's not Esau.
Okay, he's going to know it wasn't him.
Yeah. And Yaakov, I think his concern would be, this does not sound kosher.
Right, so one thing would be Yaakov, who we refer to from different psukim as the Isha Emes, the man of truth.
Wouldn't be honest.
Like you're asking me to run in there and feed him, and clearly what was known is that Yitzchak couldn't see. That was clearly well understood by everybody at this point that he had lost his eyesight, because all she says to him is, go in there, feed him, and you'll get the blessings. So it was definitely an underlying assumption that everybody had that Yitzchak would not know who was standing in front of him. So with all of the possibilities that might be going through Yaakov's head, let's see what his actual response is as he hears his command. Says Yaakov in verse 11, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayomer Yaakov el Rivka imo, Yaakov says to Rivka, his mother, Hein Esav achi ish sa'ir. Listen, my brother Esav is a hairy man, Va'anochi ish chalak, and I am smooth skinned. Ulay musheni avi dehayisi be'enav kemis ateya. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall be. Now the word mis ateya is an interesting word. We'll go with Art Scrolls translation for now. I shall be as a mocker in his eyes. Vehevesi aloi klala velo vracha. And he will therefore bring me, or I will be bringing upon myself, a curse rather than a blessing.
Well, you would think that he would say, Mother, this isn't right.
Excellent. So that's what I want to bring out. In other words, we're so familiar, this is one of those stories we're so familiar with, let's try to work it through as if we were reading it for the first time. He has no objection to the plan. There is no sense that Yaakov says to his mother, but Ima, Abba wants to give Esav a bracha, not me.
Yeah.
That we don't find. Now, whether or not this is going to be tied to the first episode, which we just spent a great deal studying, which was what? He bought the birthright. So he might be thinking, I actually have every right to the blessings. But in terms of learning from his response, there is no response that has in it a sense of...
It's righteous.
Right? This is wrong, and I won't take part in it. What's his concern? I will get caught. And why? Think about it again. Why does he think he's going to get caught?
Because the father will be
hairy.
Right? Isn't that amazing? What would be the reasons you... Let's say we would have read this story from the beginning, and we would have said, okay, you're Yaakov, and you have a fear of getting caught. Why are you afraid that you're going to get caught?
Because he would feel him. He would know.
That's what you think that Yitzchak is going to feel him?
Well...
Is that the greatest concern you would have if you're Yaakov?
Voice might not be the same.
Okay, first you got to worry about a voice. So either he felt that their voices were literally identical as twins, that they actually had the same voice.
I'm surprised that it's not the ethical thing to do.
Excellent. It's on the table. We put that on the table already. Not only does Rivka say to do it, Yaakov does not object to doing it. So we're going to have to put that on the table and say, why not? But that's clear throughout this story. That's not part of the problem. He's concerned he's going to get caught. And what's going to happen if he gets caught? He's actually going to get a curse as opposed to a blessing. So that he says, Ima, this is a bad idea. It's going to net a negative result. I'm going to end up being cursed instead of being blessed. I'm asking, what should be, if we had a list, what should be his concerns? So we could say his voice. He simply is going to walk in there and he's going to know it's not Esav, it's Yaakov. So Elamai, what must be going on? Voice must clearly not be an issue. Either they must have actually naturally sounded exactly the same, or Yaakov knew his brother's voice so well that he could get away with that. But clearly, that's not a problem. I think it's important as we go through the rest of the story to note that when they're planning it, no one's concerned with what would have been the most obvious of concerns for any of us of, how are you going to go in there and pretend you're somebody else? He's going to know right away. A father doesn't recognize his two sons' voices. And clearly it must have been twins to the extent that they have the same voice. What else is he not concerned with?
He's not concerned that he's taking his brother's blessing.
Okay, so not concerned that it's unethical. He's not concerned that he's taking his brother's blessing. He's clearly not concerned about the eyesight issue. That has been, when the Torah says that his eyes have dimmed from seeing, that's to be taken absolutely literally, that there is no way he's going to actually even be able to recognize that fact. And he's clearly not afraid of being able to get in and out before Esav comes back. That's clearly part of the problem. His only problem is, my father is going to feel me. And that might have been his known way of Yitzchak. Whenever he wanted to know who he was talking to, he would feel him. But that was his one concern. I can't feel hairy like my brother, and therefore I'm going to receive curses as opposed to blessings. So far, so good? Just pointing out what I said, right?
Yeah.
Vatomer Elohimo, what does his mother respond to his concern? Olai kililasecha b'ni. Upon me will your curses be, my son. Ach shema b'koli v'lech kach li. Only heed my voice and go fetch them for me. What's missing in her response? And again, you know what he's going to do in the end, but we don't know that yet. We're reading the story. What's missing? He's got a concern. She says, this is our plan. We got to get in there. We're going to steal the blessings. Go to the flock. Get me the kids. I'm going to prepare them the way your father loves. You go feed them. You're going to get the blessings. And he says, but mom... He's going to feel me. He's going to know I'm not Esav, and I'm going to get a curse. And what does she say? I'll take the curse. That's a risk we're willing to take. She does not in any way tell him. Now, we don't know the story. What did you actually expect her to say? Don't worry, I'm going to take the skins, and I'm going to put them... Because we all know that that's what he does. But she doesn't... That's not here yet. Her response is simply...
I'll take
the curses.
Oh, I'm looking at it another way. She's been planning this a long time.
Why do you say that?
He's been getting very old.
Because you're going to play that element which we discussed of. We all know that he's getting old. We have this sold birthright. Now, does Rivka know that Yaakov sold or bought the birthright back a couple decades earlier?
Not that we know.
We don't know that. We do not know that Yaakov ever told his mother, or his father for that matter, that on the day that Abraham had died, decades before, and he was sitting Shiva and he was preparing a lentil soup, that on that day he had sold the birthright. We don't know that. What else do we not know? Whether or not Rivka ever told Yaakov the prophecy that she had received. Yaakov. We don't know that Rivka ever told her little boy, Yaakov, right, about this prophecy that said, one day might will pass from the elder to the younger, and he's going to serve you. We don't know that Yaakov knows. We know that, but we don't know that Yaakov knows that. So we now have Rivka simply commanding her son to go to the flock, to take the kids, to slaughter them and prepare them. He says, but I'm afraid I'm going to be cursed. And she simply says, it's on me. If that happens, so be it. I'm willing to risk this. Now, you have to, now again, put yourself in Yaakov's shoes, and your mother just told you that. You have to be imagining that whatever is about to take place. Now, he wasn't there for the conversation between Yitzchak and Esav. He's only hearing it reported from his mother. He's got to be assuming this is clearly worth dying for, spiritually or physically, whatever it may be. Whatever's about to take place between Yitzchak and Esav, the blessing that's about to be given, because he says, I don't know, Mom, this is a bad idea, I'm going to get cursed. And she says, it's on me, just do it. It's got to be something of great significance. Okay, what's his response to her command? Vayelech. So he goes. Pasuk Yedalet 14. Vayelech, vayikach, vayavelu imo. Three consecutive verbs. So he went, and he took, and he brought to his mother. Vatas imo matamim ka'asher ohev aviv. And she made for him delicacies as his father loved. Comments, questions?
She has it all figured out.
She certainly has it all figured out, and she knows that. I just think, as a small comment, I think it's interesting that it says she made the delicacies as his father loved, as opposed to what would have been the other way to say that? Yeah. As opposed to as her husband, or just as Yitzhak loved. But the central focus of the story has now become Yaakov, and so he's the pronoun that we're dealing with. She went and she fetched, and he fetched. He gave it to his mother, and his mother made it as his father loved. So just if you ask, who's the central figure in verse 14, it's clear that the Torah wants us to think that who's the central figure? This is all about Yaakov. Even because we could have easily said this verse from a objective narrator perspective, we would have said, and Yaakov went and brought to Rivka, and Rivka made the way Yitzchak loved.
Yeah.
But the Torah clearly has it. This is all taking place from Yaakov's world. The significance of that we'll leave out for now, but it's something to note as we go through the story. This is Yaakov's story. So far, so good? 15. Tesva vatikach Rivka et bigdei Esav beno agadol hachamudos asher ito babayis. And Rivka took the clothing of Esav, of her older son, hachamudos. Now we're going to have to see, there are going to be various translations of the words chamudos, which is again an interesting word. You'll note if you're reading it in the art scroll side, and they called it clean garments. Now the word chamudos, again, we're going to see various interpretations of the word, as well in the Chazal, in the sages. It's an unnecessary word in the text here. Whatever chamudos means, the Torah simply needed to say, Rivka took Esav's clothing that she had with her in the house and put them on Yaakov. And the Torah describes the clothing with an additional adjective. They were chamudos. No, chamud either sometimes means, in modern Hebrew we would say, it means cute. You ever hear a little baby called a chamud, chamuda? It means dear. And here it also can clearly mean clean. Whatever it's going to mean, there's a descriptive word of Esav's clothing that is unnecessary for our story. And we will certainly get back to that. But in either case, let's just stick with our storyline for a moment. Rivka takes Esav's clothing, which she had with her in the house, and she clothed Yaakov, her younger son, in them. Now, we cannot help but notice what's odd or of note in this pasuk. Well, I'll ask it as a question.
Two things.
Yeah?
One, why do we need to know that that's her younger son again.
Excellent. Like, how many times is the Torah going to tell us that Esav is the elder son and that Yaakov is the younger son? We would have known that before we started this entire episode, because we just finished a whole episode earlier in the parasha. Within this episode, we have now seen several times where Esav is defined as the elder and Yaakov is defined as the younger, which is of particular note given that Yaakov has bought the right to be the elder. And the Torah here continuously stresses that Esav is indeed the elder and it is Yaakov who is the younger. Good. You had another point?
Yeah, the other question was, Esav is married. Why are his clothes at her house?
Good. Excellent point. Esav is married, as we started with today. He has, in fact, two wives. And who's got his clothing? Okay, now, number one, let's make a couple of points. Is this his primary daily garment?
No.
Clearly not, because where's Esav right now? He's out in the field hunting, and there are clothing that's in mommy's closet that he has. So there's clearly something about this clothing which the Torah has already used in an extraneous word, chamudos, which will leave open either clean or dear, special, something, to define them. They're not his everyday workday clothing, because when he goes out hunting, he does not take them with him. But where he stores them is with mommy. So it is certainly of note. It's an excellent question we'll have to get back to when we figure out what these clothing are. Not only do they have some special descriptive word, but where are they stored? Not in his home with one of his two wives, but with Rivka, his mother. Excellent point. Anything else on the pasuk?
Wouldn't you think she wouldn't want the clothes to be clean? No. Because
okay, why?
He's going in. She's disguising him. His arms and all.
Yeah.
So if he feels the clothing, that's also, you think.
Because they should feel they should be dirty?
Yeah.
I mean, because he just came back from the field.
Yeah.
Okay.
He would indulge his father with the food being dirty.
Excellent.
He would have cleaned himself.
So in other words, so we say it could be that we would understood that Esav would have gotten himself dressed up. Right? He would have come back from the field in his work clothes. He would have slaughtered the meat and prepared it, which is going to be a dirty task. And a smelly task, all this blood and guts and fresh meat. And so now he would then get dressed up in a nice clean suit to actually serve the meal. So that's certainly, I think, very plausible why she would then particularly take some type of clean special clothes to get Yaakov dressed up in order to come in. Excellent points.
And it's in her house because when he serves his father, that's where he had to be.
Very good. So 2 points. Number one, is this addressing Yaakov's concern that his father is going to feel him?
No.
No, it's not. It's not, because look at the next verse. The eis oros gidayeho izim, and the skins of the goat kids that she had just killed, hilbisha es yadav, she covered his arms. The eschelkas tzavarov, and his smooth skinned neck. So she does two things that are separate. To Yaakov's concern that my father is going to feel me and discover that I'm not really Esav, how did she address that?
With the skin.
Putting the skins on his arms and on his neck. So why did he put him in Esav's clothing?
Because when you can't see, everything else gets developed. You could smell the difference.
Could be. Excellent suggestion. But there's some other reason in which Yaakov needs to be wearing Esav's clothing. It wasn't just a concern that he shouldn't be wearing his yeshiva clothes, whereas Esav's going to come in and hunt in hunter's clothes, and Yitzchak will figure that out. Yaakov didn't say that. He only was concerned about being felt on his arms. She addresses two issues. Not only does she put the goat skin on his arms, but also puts the clothing of Esav that she had stored away in her house on his body. And in such does he dress up and go in to see his father. Now, I am not a farmer nor a shepherd of any sort, although I want to be one when I move to Israel. But for the time being, I have no information whether or not the skin of a goat would in any way parallel the hairy skin of Esav. My feelings, not being a farmer, is that one might be able to tell the difference. I don't know. Yeah.
It seems to me that she's really concerned with giving him all the externals of Esav, and maybe even giving a message that this is what Esav is. If you put the hair on and you put the clothes on.
Excellent. Excellent. We're going to have a lot to say about it as we go through the commentators on this. That's a beautiful point in which we are definitely having a lot of attention paid towards the externals of, if I just put on some clothing and some goat skin, look, ta-da, I am Esav. So we will see. But okay, but that's bringing up some good points. So we have it, so he's getting all dressed up and ready to go in. So far, so good? What response have you gotten from Yaakov at this point? Nothing, right? But he is a passive participant at this point. In other words, she gives him a suggestion. He objected, and he said, he didn't object to on grounds of this is wrong. He objected on the grounds of I will get caught. He then actively goes and gets the two goats that he does. And then from that point now, he is passive. She slaughters, she prepares, and then it says, and she dresses him. A, she dresses him in Esav's clothing. B, she puts the skins on him, and he is just a participant in that role. Now, let's move forward. 17, Yud-Zayin, V'atitein es ha-matamim v'es ha-lechem asher asosa biyad Yaakov bina. And she placed the delicacies and the bread that she had made in the hands of Yaakov, her son. Questions and comments. Excellent. Right? Where did the loaf of bread show up before? Remember?
Birthright.
Right? We had said in the birthright, the sale was going to be over the lentil stew. Haliteni na min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. Esav says, pour in me that red stuff. And the deal was, will you sell me the birthright? Esav says, fine, I'm going to die anyway. And then the pasuk says, and Yaakov gave to Esav the lentil soup and the bread, and he ate, and they got up, and he left, and he disparaged the birthright. He said, I don't know if it's a big deal or not, but we made a comment of, isn't it interesting that the deal was over the lentil soup, and what was served what included bread? Maybe it's a nothing, maybe it's standard food. If it was standard, so I would say, why does the Torah feel the need to mention it in the same way as, of course there was bread, so you don't have to tell me there was bread. But no, the Torah bothers to say to me that when he sold the lentil soup, included in the deal, Yaakov makes bread. And if you remember, I foreshadowed, I said, just keep that in mind, because we see that here as well. What does Yitzchak request? Go out to the field, hunt for me game the way that I love, and then I'll be able to bless you. The whole story, that's all that's spoken about. Rivka then repeats the story to Yaakov and says, this is what your father said. Go to the flock, get me the kids. It says she slaughtered it, she prepared it. She hands it to him together with the bread. Again, I say the same thing. I don't know, maybe it's not such a big deal. And then again I say, but why then does the Torah, on both of these occasions, when something is taking place over food, not only mention the lentil soup and the steak, but it mentions that there was bread that she had made as well? If it's insignificant, why mention it? If it is mentioned, why is it significant? That's my question. Okay, any other questions or comments on this verse? She placed the delicacies and the bread which she had made into the hands of her son, Yaakov.
Well, it's the same, it's her son, as we were told before.
Okay, actually, if we would go through this whole story again and we would note, just focusing on that phrase, how many times does it say, her son, his son, older son, younger son? Again, we have that here. Any other comments on this verse?
No, she placed them. Why didn't you say she gave them?
Okay. I would add to that question. The whole verse seems meaningless to me. What did we learn? Like, what would have been if we skipped this entire verse and we went straight from verse 16 with the skins and the goat kid, she covered his arms and his smooth skin neck, and then we went straight to verse 18 and he came to his father and said, Father, and he said, here I am. Here, eat something. Would anyone here have said, wait a minute, it never says that she gave him the food? Would anyone ask that question?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would.
And you wouldn't have then thought, now, well, of course she gave him the food. Why don't I need a whole verse to say that she gave him the food? Of course she did. That's what's going on over here.
Yeah, I would have wanted it.
You would have wanted it. I would have thought the story would have been just fine without it. So I find this entire verse of notes, aside from the fact that it adds that there's bread in the equation, which may or may not be so terribly significant. But so what the verse is saying is that your comment that she placed it in his hand then becomes more significant, because in my mind the whole verse really teaches me very little. I mean, of course she gave it to him to bring it to her father. So that the way that she's giving to him is that there's something about now it's being placed in his hand, more than just saying, and she gave it to him, but that she placed it in his hand and now he walks in. So it's certainly interesting. Yeah.
We have two things like that. They have she placed and the bread which she made. And it's almost like this is the answer to the blessing and curse. This is her taking responsibility. I made this.
Almost again playing off of that, who's the active and who's the passive participant here, in the same way as she dressed him. She put the skins on his arms. She commands him. She takes the curses. We have a specific verse saying she then actually, it wasn't that he then took the stuff that she had made. She literally placed it into his hands and said, okay, go. So it certainly is adding to that, like, whose story is this about? Is this a Rivka story? Or is this a Yaakov story? Or is it both? But certainly this would put more weight back on it's a Rivka story, not an actual Yaakov story. Okay, very good. Very good. So far, so good. Any other comments on the verse? Then let us proceed. We still have time. Okay, so now we move into, in other words, if we were to break this story down into this one episode down into its three components, which we'll do when we go over all the commentaries, we would start, I guess, the third section over here. The first section would be Yitzchak's conversation with Esav when he makes the original request of, I'm getting old, I want to bless you, go out to the field and make me the food. Section two would then be Rivka's conversation with Yaakov and the plotting and preparing for him going in to take it. And then we would begin the next section of the story would now be the actual episode as it takes place where he walks in. That would begin here with verse 18. Vayavo el aviv. Now here you can't say that Yaakov is a passive participant anymore. There's at a certain point, Rivka is going to have to shrink into the background. And Yaakov is going to have to take the reins himself and now become the active participant. Vayavo el aviv. And Yaakov comes to his father, Vayomer Avi, and says to him, Avi, my father. Vayomer Hineni. And he says, here I am. Miatobini, who are you, my son? Questions, comments on this verse?
It doesn't seem like, I mean, he's bringing him the food and he's going under the disguise of Esau, but it doesn't seem like, it seems odd that he just stands there and says, father. And
okay.
His father says, here I am, even though he's the one who can't see. It should be obvious he's right there.
Okay, good. You have a suggestion?
Who are you?
Just he would have started with that. So let's take that. Is this familiar? This refrain of father, here I am.
Yeah.
Okay, so there are a couple of places. This is the third time we've seen something very similar. Let's go through them. In this particular story, we had this just a few verses earlier. How does our story begin? A page before, in verse number one. When Yitzchak calls in Esav, what does he say to him? Bini, my son. When Esav, he calls Esav, Esav comes in. So Esav walks in, and Yitzchak, the father, opens up to him and says,
my son.
And Esav responds, Hineni. Yes. So here we have the exact opposite of that, where Yaakov now walks in, and he opens up and he says, father. And Yitzchak responds, Hineni.
Who are you?
I am here. Now, as you pointed out, like, he's not going anywhere. He's a blind, older man sitting in his tent, but he does respond with that same hineni. But we had a very similar refrain, which we mentioned earlier, a previous time, and that was on the walk up to Har HaMoriah at the time of the binding of Isaac, where was Yitzchak, who's now the older father, but then he was the son, and he says to his father, Abraham, he says the exact same words which are taking place over here. There he says, Avi, father, and Abraham responded, Hineni b'ni, I am here, my son. There he adds the word b'ni. There it was Yitzchak saying, what's going on over here? I see there's a fire, there's a knife, there's the wood, there's no animal. Father, are you still my father? And Avram responds, Hineni b'ni. Now, Yitzchak, who was the one who asked the question there, he's now an older man, and his son, Yaakov, says to him the same thing, Avi. It's not a question, it's more of a statement, Avi. And Yitzchak responds, Hineni, here I am. Why does he need to say Hineni? But I'm just pointing out that this type of dialogue of father, son, son, father, I'm here, has come up now quite a number of times. Excellent. Now, is this an interesting opening line to the whole episode? He just says, father, here I am. And what's Yitzchak's question?
Who are you?
Strange question. Why is that why is it a strange question?
But,
okay, he's expecting Esav, right? He just sent Esav out. And he's now walked in. So there really should be nothing odd about the fact that one of his children, let's assume that their voices are the same, because that was seemed to have never been a concern of Yaakov. So it must be that he's somewhat similar voice. He walks in and he says, Avi. And Yitzchak says, who are you? So something really must be odd here that we haven't naturally picked up on. And what would that be? So it could be his voice. If it's his... excellent, and he came back quickly. So if it's his voice, the only reason why I'm hesitant to say that is because I would have thought that should have been a concern of Yaakov's earlier. If Yaakov was so concerned about being felt, then I would have thought he should have had a concern about his voice. So it sounds to me that Yaakov wasn't concerned about that. So when he says, Avi, it wasn't that he sounded strange that made his father ask that question. It must be something else. It could certainly be that he got there so quickly. There's another possibility, which I don't know if anyone is going to comment on, which would simply be, maybe this type of dialogue was an odd dialogue for Esav to have. Maybe it was a normal thing for Yaakov to say, Avi and Hineni, but maybe Esav didn't. I don't know that. All I know is that as we read the story, and it begins to unfold from the very first moment, something is wrong in the story. Yitzchak asks his son, whom he had asked to go get the meal. He comes in with a meal and he says, who are you, my son? Which to me implies there's already suspicion that something is wrong. Yeah.
But it could also be that would be the way one of the sons would come in to Yitzchak. Yitzchak wouldn't know which one it was. And he would say, which boy are you? Because, the voices sounded the same.
Okay, so Dean is suggesting maybe it's not so standard, we're making a big deal about it, but let's leave on the table the possibility that there's actually nothing suspicious in his question. He had twins, they sounded alike, and he couldn't see. So that it might be absolutely run-of-the-mill normal, whenever one of the boys would say, Avi, he would say, which child am I speaking to? Now, let me remind you, if you want to take that train of thought, what does it probably smell like when Yaakov, walks in with freshly cooked food? Does Yitzchak have a sense that there's a steak dinner in front of him?
No.
I would think so. I would think so. Yaakov is what?
He realized he wouldn't have said, who are you? Oh,
you're not even asking my question. All I'm saying is that Yaakov walks in. We know he walks in with a tray of freshly cooked meat and freshly baked bread. How does that smell?
Right?
That smells gishmak. Right? That's more than gishmak. And he asked for it. So it's not like he's in the middle of his day, and one of the boys walks in with a fresh meal, and he's like, who are you and what are you doing? This is what he asked for, and clearly that's what has come in. And yet he says, who are you? Well, this is exactly what should have played itself out, which would certainly point to the idea that maybe this was too fast to have happened. Now, it couldn't have been too quickly because even Rivka, who just had to go to the backyard and take a kid, still needed to slaughter it, skin it, get the meat, get it ready, roast it. That, I mean, it still takes some amount of time, but whatever time it took was clearly less than if you had to add to that the time needed to actually go and hunt it. So that would certainly point to that, but we have a very interesting opening to the dialogue of, who are you, my son? Other questions or comments?
I would think the smell of bread would also be a reward, but it's not his health. I can't imagine he was a baker as well as a hunter.
Okay, very interesting point. As we're focusing on the bread and the role that the bread plays, and being that we have this freshly baked bread, would that also raise a suspicion in Yitzchak's mind to say, is your mother at work over here? We don't know what he's thinking. There's no reason to suspect that he thinks that Rivka got involved, but was or was not Esav a baker of bread as well as a hunter? Interesting point. Maybe it was standard, maybe it wasn't standard. Again, I don't know. We'll leave that on the table when we discuss when eventually, hopefully, we'll get back to the bread issue. Let's go on. Pasuk 19, verse 19. Vayomer is going to be one of the psukim again that we're going to spend a lot of time on, because let's see Yaakov's response. He's now been put on the spot. His father Yitzchak has just asked him, Mi ata bini, who are you, my son? Says Yaakov, Vayomer Yaakov el aviv, and Yaakov responds to his father, Anochi Esav bichorecha, I am Esav, your firstborn. Or as it's translated, they're translating on the left side in the English article based on Rashi's translation. It is I, you'll see there, Esav, your firstborn. These three words are going to be the subject to much discussion. Anochi Esav b'charecha, I, Esav, your firstborn. Asisi ka'asher dibarta elai, I have done as you have told me. Kum na shiva, come please rise up and sit. The ochla mitzeidi, and eat of my game. Ba'avor tivarchani nafshecha, in order that your soul shall bless me.
How did he come up with that?
Okay, excellent. What's the problem with the soul?
She didn't.
Excellent. Yitzchak said that to Esav, but Rivka never said that to Yaakov. Rivka's words to Yaakov always were, he wants to bless you, and let him bless you instead of Esav. But he never said in order that his soul, she never says that. But Yaakov does when he on his own said, what I want is a blessing that comes from your soul, not just from you, whatever that will mean. But Yaakov adds that, I want it that it should be that your soul shall bless me. Now, everyone, as I mentioned, is going to make a big deal about the phrase, Anochi Esav b'charecha. It is I, Esav, your firstborn, or Esav is your firstborn, however we'll translate that phrase. What else in the phrase is difficult of what Yaakov responds? Excellent. So, however, we'll deal with that phrase of Anochi Esav v'charecha. He also says, "And I have done all that you have spoken to me," which certainly in this case is. Maybe there are other things that Yaakov and Yitzchak have discussed, but here he says, "I have done all that you have spoken to me," and then he says, "Kum na shiva, please rise up and sit, ve'ochlo mitzeidi, and eat from my game, in order that your soul will bless me." Let's move on. I mean, any other questions or comments? Okay, 20. Chaf, pasuk chaf. Vayomer Yitzchak el bino, and Yitzchak now said to his son, Maze miharta limtso bini. How is it that you were so quick to find my son? Now this is going to answer some of our questions. We had asked, why was he already asking, who are you? So he was clearly suspicious. It would seem the text itself is telling us, how in the world did you get here so fast? So Yaakov responded, well, it's me, it's Esav. To which Yitzchak says, so no, Yitzchak is clearly suspicious, but the person standing in front of him claims that it is indeed Esav, the eldest son. He's done that which he had been commanded to do.
love this next trip.
Right? So he says, so how is it possible that you found so fast? Which is an interesting thing that Yitzchak should ask Esav, who's the expert hunter. Mm-hmm. How is it that you were able to find so quickly? Vayomer, and Yaakov responds, Ki hikra Hashem Elokecha lefanoi. Because God has arranged that I would be able to do so. Ki hikra Hashem Elokecha lefanoi. Because God has arranged it for me.
In other words, I'm not finding over here your God, but that's what fascinated me.
Right, that's what he says. Ki yikro Hashem Elokecha lefanoi. Hashem, your God, has made it happen or arranged it for me. That's correct. He uses that language.
Yeah, why would he use your God? So good God.
Now, Yaakov is trying to play the role of Esav. So this might be an insight into the way that Esav would normally talk, in which Esav would say, Hashem, your God, which would be an interesting thing if that were true. But again, we're putting ourselves in Yaakov's shoes for a moment. Here he's trying to make sure that his father doesn't discover who he really is. So when he speaks, he says, this happened so fast, my son. And he says, well, amazing. God really worked miracles today. He says, Hashem, your God really worked miracles today. And look, I was able to succeed. Okay, one more verse. We've got two more minutes. Vayomer Yitzchak el Yaakov. And Yitzchak said to Yaakov, Gishona ve'amushcha b'ni. Come close, if you please, so I can feel you, my son. Ha'ata ze b'ni Esav im lo. That you are indeed my son Esav, or not? Questions, comments on this verse?
He's still not sure.
Okay, he's clearly still not sure.
Definitely not sure.
Okay, what else?
Well, I think Yaakov thinking about him being a smooth skin versus hairy skin was the right thing to think about.
Okay, we clearly see a justification when Yaakov said, my concern is that he will ask to feel me and I will be caught. He was 100% correct. That was Yitzchak's primary way, it seems, of actually identifying which one of his two children was in front of him. He clearly has suspicions. We'll have to go through when we go through the story again where all of his suspicions are emanating from. He is clearly suspicious. From the moment Yaakov walks in and he says, who are you, my son? And then he says, how did you get here so fast? And he says, come here, let me feel you. Every response he has had since Yaakov walks in is a response of, I'm suspicious as to who you are. So A, we certainly have justified Yaakov's concern. There's something else I think of note in this passage. What else do you see in here? To me, I think this is the first time that we have seen this in this entire episode in which we have a reference of, and Yitzchak or Rivka spoke to, blank.
Oh, it doesn't say his son.
Excellent. Oh, I think it's, I'm going to go through. Almost every time we have someone speaking to someone else, we have the relationship included or almost defined who's being spoken to. It was Yitzchak speaking to Esav, his son. His older son, to Yaakov, his younger son. Rivka said to her son, your father. There was always a defining relationship in he said to who. He said to him, or whatever it was. And I think this is the first time that we have the simple phrase of, and Yitzchak said to Yaakov. Where, and then it doesn't say, he said to his son, or doesn't even say to Yaakov, his son. It just says, and Yitzchak said to Yaakov. And I believe that's the first time that that's actually said here. In which he, and then what does he say? Come close, please, my son. Let me see if you are my son Esav or not. Okay, we will leave it at that. We have still lots of stuff to go, lots of questions already on the table as we continue working through this particularly fascinating episode. Okay, Mirza Shem, we'll see you all next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.